We have a cracker of a show for you tonight, gals and gents. Wash your black heads, grab a seat, and enjoy this episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, entitled The Markham Matter.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Dollar.
This is Ed Porter, Mr. Dollar. You called my office?
Yes, I'd like to see you as soon as I can, Mr. Porter.
Well, of course. How long have you been in town?
About a half an hour.
Are you all squared away?
I've got a room and I've had a bath, if that's what you mean.
Well, then I guess you're ready to go to work.
I will be as soon as I put on some pants.
You sound in a rush.
I'm always in a rush when I think somebody might be chipping us out of $100,000.
Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Western Life and Trust Company, 826 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Markham matter. Expense account item 1, $143.69, air transportation from Hartford to San Francisco. Item 2, $17 for incidentals along the way, including transportation from the airport to the St. Francis Hotel. I walked the 8 blocks to the Commodore building where Ed Porter had his office on the fourth floor. He was a short, thin insurance broker with a face like a tight drum. He apologized for the clammy weather as though it were his fault. He asked me how things were out on the East Coast and invited me to sit down and looked as uncomfortable as he was.
I got the telegram you were coming last night. Investigator. I've never met one in all my years in the business. Must be very interesting work.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to take up too much of your time, Mr. Porter, but I would like to get some information from you.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Dollar.
What can you tell me about a man named Floyd Markham?
Markham? Well, he's the husband of a client of mine. I've met him, but I really can't tell you too much about him. My dealings have always been with Mrs. Markham. She's my customer.
Then tell me about Mrs. Markham.
Oh, certainly. I'm not going to ask why. I'm sure you have a good reason for coming all the way to San Francisco.
The home office thinks I have an excellent reason.
Yes. Mrs. Markham. Well, I've known her for 20 years as a customer. She's wealthy, always has been, and she handles her money well, and she lives rather well.
Mrs. Markham's the one who has the money, huh?
Mr. Markham is a salaried man, an industrial engineer. Frankly, I think he depends on Mrs. Markham for his livelihood.
Oh, yeah. These two checks were issued to Mrs. Markham this year. Recognize them?
Yes. Full payments on two endowment policies, $50,000 apiece. And they've cleared the bank. Anything wrong with them?
Nothing wrong with the checks.
On payoffs like this, I always take it in person. It's a custom, of course, to call and make an appointment and deliver the check to the client.
Mm-hmm. And try to sell a little more insurance in the bargain.
Well, that's about the idea, yes.
Yeah. Anything strange about Mrs. Markham when you delivered either one of these checks?
No.
Before I left Hartford, I looked up her insurance records. Her premiums are always paid right on the button. Mrs. Markham doesn't have a business office or a business manager handling her affairs. The checks are always personal checks on her personal account. Now, can you explain why someone like that might forget a third endowment policy?
Why, no.
Well, there is a third endowment policy. It matured this month. I have the check with me for $50,000.
Well, yes, but this business of forgetting...
Floyd Markham called Hartford and spoke to the head of the endowment division. He explained that Mrs. Markham was ill and didn't know whether or not a third policy existed. He said he was checking for her.
Uh-huh.
Now, you say you've known Mrs. Markham over a period of 20 years. Well, is she the kind of person who'd forget $50,000?
No one forgets $50,000.
Did you notice that both of those checks were deposited in the Markham's joint account?
No. So they were. Maybe Mrs. Markham's feeling generous these days.
Why do you say that?
Well, they have a rather strange relationship as far as I've been able to perceive. I mean, what money he makes is his and what she has is hers.
Oh, yeah.
I always like to get out of that house because they never seem to me to be a very close couple in any way. But this seems to make sense now.
How's that, Mr. Porter?
Well, now, I called up and made an appointment to deliver both of these checks. The first time I went over, Mrs. Markham was ill. And the second time, she had just stepped out for a few minutes.
Well, who accepted the checks?
Mr. Markham.
Both times?
Yes. As a matter of fact, now that I think of it, he made the appointment on the phone both times.
When was the last time you saw Mrs. Markham?
Last spring.
A check with a bank revealed that Mrs. Markham had not personally made a deposit since June the 18th. The deposit slips were initialed by Floyd Markham. The checks were endorsed by Leslie Markham. There had been no unusual withdrawals. Expense account item 3, $30, stenographic and notary services for the attached statements.
Mrs. Markham's been having her hair done here for nearly 10 years now. Once a week, every Thursday morning. Then she just stopped. I called her home, and Mr. Markham informed me that she was away on an extended trip.
Mr. Markham called us, it was last June, and informed us that Mrs. Markham was resigning her membership in the Bridge Club. I telephoned the house twice to see what was the matter. Mr. Markham answered both times and said Mrs. Markham was out.
Well, she used to come in here two or three times a month. Made us go over the car from top to bottom. She hasn't been around now for 7 or 8 months. I don't know who's taking care of the car.
Expense account item 4, 30 cents, 3 phone calls to the Markham residence. I didn't state any particular business. I simply asked to speak to Mrs. Markham. Each time I called, a male voice answered. Each time, the male voice told me Mrs. Markham was out, she was ill, and she was away on a short trip. Industrial Management Limited, Floyd B. Markham President, has a 3-room office suite near the Embarcadero. 10 years ago, it had been sensationally new and glassy. When I got there, the carpet was a little too thin and the varnish a little too thin, too. The whole place smelled faintly of mildew.
Yes?
I'd like to see Mr. Markham, please.
Do you have an appointment?
No, not exactly. My name is Harris. I'm with the Cleveland Pump Company.
Pump Company?
Yes, we're setting in 38 of our installations at the new plant in Valparaiso. Didn't you get my letter?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm afraid... May I ask your name again?
Harris, Stephen B. Harris, Cleveland Pump Company.
Oh, yes. Well, Mr. Harris, I'm afraid Mr. Markham never received your letter. When did you mail it?
30 days ago. Maybe it was 2 weeks. Well, tell Mr. Markham I'm here and
I'm sorry, Mr. Harris. Mr. Markham isn't in the office just now.
Oh. Well, I'll wait.
Well? He won't be in today. As a matter of fact, he won't be in the rest of the week.
Where can I call him?
Well, I'm afraid that's impossible.
Can't I call him at home?
No.
Now, look, is he in business or isn't he?
Mr. Harris, Mr. Markham hasn't been in the office for 6 months or more. He's tied up on a rather long-range project.
What's your name?
I'm Miss Beidler.
Why didn't you say that in the first place, Miss Beidler?
Well,
who else can I talk to here?
No one, I'm afraid.
You mean that's all there is in this office? Just you and him, when he feels like coming in?
I'll tell Mr. Markham you were here.
The Markham house was on Fiordella Street, about 6 blocks from the Fairmont Hotel. Stone walls, iron grillwork, tangling ivy. An old house that had been built by rich people for rich people to live in. The kind of shabby-looking place that only New Yorkers and San Franciscans can get by with and still be called wealthy. I used Ed Porter's car, with the Western Life and Trust Company emblem on the door, parked it in the driveway as close as I could to the entrance. It was exactly 1 o'clock when the door opened. He was tall and pretty, with black hair and broad shoulders.
Yes? What is it?
I'd like to see Mrs. Markham, please.
I'm Mr. Markham. Can I help you?
My name's Dollar. I'm with Western Life and Trust Company. Mr. Porter called you?
No, he didn't.
Oh, well, I must have slipped his mind. He said he was going to call.
What's it about?
I brought a check from Mrs. Markham on her third endowment policy.
Oh. Well, I'll give it to her. She isn't in right now.
Well, I'm supposed to deliver it to her. I'll come back another time when she's in.
No, you can give it to me. I'll see that she gets it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Markham, but I have
Look,
to
Look, I know you want to give her the check and try to sell her some more insurance. She's just not in the market. And you can save your little spiel where it'll do some good.
Oh, you misunderstand me, Mr. Markham. I have to deliver this to her in person.
What's your name again?
Dollar. Johnny Dollar.
Come in.
I'll wait till she comes back and make an appointment. Mr. Porter told me he'd made it for three today.
She's here. Just come in.
Why the runaround, then?
Mrs. Markham is desperately ill. I don't want to disturb her with things like this.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. What's the trouble?
Very serious anemia. So if you'll just give me the
check...
I have a report
to make out when I deliver this.
I just
only take a minute to hand her the check. Then it'll be off my mind and off your mind.
Now, look here, Mr.
Didn't you call the company's home office about this check?
I called because Mrs. Markham requested me to call.
Oh, yes.
Just wait here.
In the little swirl of his exit, I smelled shaving lotion and guessed at the brand name. I also guessed that his suit cost $300, even if I didn't know what San Francisco tailor had made it. The shirt, the tie, the shoes were expensive, too. Yeah, Mr. Floyd Markham liked expensive things. I wondered if he dyed his hair to keep it all black. I wondered if he was 45 or 50. I also wondered why, in a house of that size, on that kind of street, a servant hadn't answered the door.
This way, Mr. Dollar.
He led me up a flight of stairs and finally into a high-ceiling room with a fireplace at one end. A gray-haired woman with a sharp, angular face was seated near the window, looking out over the city and the bay. She didn't turn her head when we came into the room, but I could see that her eyes were watery and slightly glazed.
Please, don't take too long and don't upset her. Leslie. Leslie, dear.
Yes, Floyd.
This is Mr. Dollar from the insurance company. He has something for you. Be a good girl, Leslie, and speak to Mr. Dollar.
How do you do?
And ask him...
Yes. How is Mr. Porter?
Oh, he's fine, Mrs. Markham, fine. He'll be sorry to hear that you've been ill.
I really would rather that you didn't tell Mr. Porter.
Oh.
I'm satisfied to make my own slow recovery and not worry any of my friends. We'd like some sherry, Floyd.
Now you know what the doctor said, Leslie.
Mr. Dollar, you'd like some sherry, wouldn't you?
Why, yes, I'd like that very much.
Floyd?
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar. It's absolutely forbidden, and you know that, dear. Do you have the check, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, right here. Here you are, Mrs. Markham.
Thank you.
Is there anything else, Mr. Dollar?
Well,
Mr. Dollar,
Now, Leslie...
Yes? What is it, Mrs. Markham?
I'm very tired. Excuse me if I seem impolite. Good day.
Good day, Mrs. Markham. Expense account item 5, 10 cents. Phone call to Ed Porter at his office.
Yes, Mr. Dollar?
Look, Mrs. Markham's 5'5", about 120, black hair, gray streak to the right of the part, blue eyes, looks about 40 years old, a good 40.
Why, yes, that sounds like her. You mean you've seen her?
I've seen what's left of her, Mr. Porter.
Oh, good Lord, she's not dead.
Almost.
What?
He's killing her, Mr. Porter. My guess is he's been at it for about 6 months.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in just a moment. Nobody will take a frown at face value anymore now that the word has gotten around about Jack Benny's return to the air. With Mary Livingston, Dennis Day, Rochester, Don Wilson, Mel Blanc, Frank Nelson, and Mr. Kitzel, nothing less than your very best smile will do for the occasion. Tonight, and every Sunday night, hear CBS Radio's Jack Benny Show and give your sense of humor a real workout. Now, Act Two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar and the Markham Matter.
Take a rich old house on a rich old street in San Francisco. Walk in with a legitimate insurance check for $50,000 and tell a man named Floyd Markham you want to deliver it to his wife. Tell him this when you know that no one has seen or heard from his wife in 6 months. Just tell him you want to see her. insist that you see her. Then stand around and listen to him lie a couple of times. Then let him take you to her. Give her the check. Say goodbye. 20 minutes after I walked out of the Markhams' house and picked up Ed Porter, we drove back to the house and parked 100 feet from the entrance.
This is the darndest thing I ever heard of, Mr. Dollar. I'm not sure it's all clear to me. What's our position?
Oh, I wouldn't know that, Mr. Porter. That's up to the legal department. This much I'm sure of right now. Markham's already deposited $100,000 of her insurance money into a joint account. If I'm not mistaken, this last check will go into that account, too. Right now, while we're sitting here, she's probably endorsing that check.
Well, then I don't see where it's any of our
business. He's making her endorse the check. He's making her stay in that house, in that room, away from everybody.
Well, how? What way? He said she was ill. You said she appeared ill. I don't know
how he's doing it, but I'm going to find out.
Are you sure this isn't all surmise on your part?
You weren't in the room when she said, "Let's have some sherry, please, let's have some sherry."
Well, I must be pretty
dumb.
She
was really trying to say she wanted him to leave the room so she could talk to me, so she could have one little minute to tell me what the matter is, what's going on. His next move is to deposit that check. Then one big withdrawal, the whole $150,000, and bye-bye, Floyd Markham.
Mr. Dollar, I'm just an insurance broker. I don't understand. Well,
how'd you like to be an investigator for about 10 minutes?
Me?
Yeah. You see that car that just pulled up in the driveway?
Well, yes.
The girl driving it holds down that dummy office of Markham's. Her name's Beidler. She might be in on this with him.
And that's Mr. Markham leaving the house.
Good. Now, look, here's what you do. Follow them. I think I know where they're going, but you follow them and make sure.
Well, where are they going?
To the bank to deposit that check.
Oh, well, where are you going?
To have that glass of sherry, Mr. Porter. Ed Porter pulled his hat down low over his face and put both hands on the wheel and took out after that 55 Cadillac sedan. I crossed the street, went back up on the porch of the house and knocked. I didn't expect her to answer. I didn't expect anyone to answer, but I wanted to make sure. I went around to the garden. There wasn't a sound in the big old house when I opened the garden door and went up the stairs again. The door to her room was closed. She wasn't by the window anymore. She was stretched out on the divan. I felt her wrist for a pulse. It was there, faint, but there. About 3 inches up her arm, there was a series of little marks. I lifted one eyelid and felt her neck muscles. She was doped to the ears. Mrs. Markham... Mrs. Markham, can you hear me? Look, I've come to help you.
Me?
Yes. Yes, I'm going to take you out of here. Now, don't be frightened.
Mr. Dollar?
That's right. That's right. That's the ticket.
Insurance company?
Yes.
Now, I remember.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you for bringing my check. I don't want... Want
what, Mrs. Markham?
Want any of my friends to worry.
Oh.
I'm improving. But I don't want them to know I'm ill. Just say I'm out of town for a while.
He told you to say that, didn't he?
Yes. He told me to say. Exactly that. Mr. Dollar, don't fool me. Please don't fool me.
What?
You will help me get out of here. You aren't fooling me, are you? Are you?
I carried her downstairs and put her in my car and drove her to the St. Regis Emergency Hospital. Expense account item $6,100, deposit with the hospital office. I explained as much as necessary to the intern who promised to advise me when Mrs. Markham became rational. After that, I drove back to the house. Ed Porter's blue coupe was parked across the street.
I didn't know what to do but come back here. And when I got back, I didn't know what to do either.
Slow down. You're doing fine.
Oh, you were right. You were absolutely right. They went straight to the Bank of America to deposit that money.
I kind of thought they might be back here by now.
No, they're over at Angelo's having a drink and some dinner. I followed them there.
You're getting to be quite a sleuth, Mr. Porter.
Well, I try to do my best and use my head. Mr. Dollar, did you talk to Mrs. Markham?
As much as I could. She was doped. I took her out and put her in the hospital.
Oh. Well, should you have done that, Mr. Dollar?
I could have left her up in that room to die, Mr. Porter.
Oh, yes. Well, what's our next move?
Ours?
Well, certainly. I can't quit now, Mr. Johnny.
Well, let's go to Angelo's, Eddie. Ed Porter settled the hat lower on his ears and gripped the wheel harder, and we took off for Angelo's on Stoker Street. When we got there, we didn't have to go inside to see if our people were still around. The Cadillac sedan was in the parking lot. So we took up a plant across the street.
Well, why wait? Why not go in and take them out of there and take them down to the police?
Well, that might blow the whole thing. Now, we have to wait and see what Mrs. Markham has to say when she's well enough to talk.
Yeah, but...
I'm sure she'll have some charges to prefer. In the meantime, we wait and see what's what.
Yeah, what do you think he'll do when he goes home and finds her gone?
Well, that'll be pretty interesting. What do you think he'll do?
Well, I imagine he'll, he'll think she got up and walked out.
No, he knows better than that. He's had her doped up for 6 months. He knows he can go out of the house and she'll stay right where he left her while he's gone. No, that isn't it.
Oh. Well, then he'll know that she had help.
That's more like it, Mr. Porter.
I liked Eddie. It gives me kind of a feeling.
Okay, Eddie. Now answer the question.
Oh, what'll he do? He'll try to get out of town. That's it. He'll try to leave town. He'll know that he's had it.
Come on.
Huh?
They're pulling out. We followed them to a cocktail lounge near the Presidio. We waited around outside the place for 2 hours. Expense account item 7, 25 cents. I called the St. Regis Receiving Hospital. Mrs. Markham's condition was unchanged. Item 8, $2, 2 hamburgers, 2 Cokes, and cigarettes for Mr. Porter and myself. We had just finished eating when Floyd Markham's Cadillac turned out onto the street. We followed it for 10 minutes. When Markham parked on a dark hill, we cut our lights and came to a stop.
Mr. Dollar?
Yeah, Eddie?
Can you see what they're doing?
Yeah.
What?
Necking.
Huh?
Necking, you know.
I should have telephoned my wife.
At 12:10, Floyd Markham turned the car around and drove back into town. We followed once more. We saw him double park outside a 4-story apartment house on a steep hill, let the woman out, then drive on. Eddie?
Yeah, Johnny?
Think you can handle something else alone?
Oh, I'd love to.
Women sometimes talk a lot easier than men. You keep on him. When he finds his wife absent, I want to know where he goes.
Wherever it is, I'll let you know. You gonna shake her down?
Something like that. Yeah. Get going. I watched my new assistant investigator follow out after Markham's Cadillac. Then I went inside the apartment house. I. Beidler was on the mailbox of apartment 104. I walked down the hall, listened a minute, and gave it a try.
Yes? Well, what on earth are you doing?
I'm here to see you, Miss Beidler. It's important.
You're, Mr. Harris.
I'm Mr. Dollar, Johnny Dollar. I'm an insurance investigator.
Oh. There was something about you today. I wasn't sure.
Now you're sure.
Oh! What are you doing?
Right now, I'm working for Western Life and Trust Company. You better sit down.
Well, I don't know that I'd better do anything, Mr. Dollar. You're rather rude.
Then you can stand. We've been checking into Floyd Markham. I don't think I have to tell you what we found out so far. I think you also know that by this time tomorrow, he'll be in jail and you might be right along with him.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Dollar. I simply
don't... Don't be sorry. Just use your head. I said you might be right along with him. On the other hand, if you have some useful information, the insurance company might be useful to you.
What do you mean?
Well, I figure he sold you on an island trip or an estate-in-the-country bill of goods. It'll be harder getting it out of him, but we'll get it one way or another. We'll get it, all right. Now, what do you want to do?
I want a drink. You?
Oh, thanks.
I'm not bad. I'm not a criminal. I've never been in trouble.
You are now.
Why? Because I fell in love with him?
Because you were helping him kill her.
What are you talking about?
Mrs. Markham. She's in a hospital right now.
What?
I took her there myself today. He's had her doped with I don't know what for months. Having her sign checks, endorse deposit slips.
Funny.
Is it?
He told me that Mrs. Markham was out of town, divorcing him. I wondered how. I... You were right. It was a country estate. In England. A genteel life, he said. The London theater. Walks in the country. Little harmless things that most people can never do. He said we could do them as soon as he cleaned up his affairs. By tonight, he said we could start packing.
I took Iris Beidler with me back to the Markham house. The Cadillac was in the garage, and Ed Porter's blue coupe was pulled up across the street. When he saw us in the cab, he walked up.
Hi.
Hi. How's he doing? You can talk in front of her.
Only he hasn't done anything. No, I mean, I saw the light go on upstairs in Mrs. Markham's room, then it went out again. He's downstairs now, sitting in the living room.
Okay, wait here. Hello, Markham.
Hello.
If you're worried about your wife, which I doubt, she's in a hospital.
Are you a policeman?
Insurance investigator. That's Miss Beidler in the taxi over there.
Oh.
I want you to come with me now.
Of course. Yes. You said your name was Dollar?
That's right.
Why couldn't you have come around, say, next week?
She'd have been dead by then.
That's the way she should have been for 16 years. Dead.
Yeah. Come on, Markham. Expense account, item 9, $102, hotel and board in San Francisco. Item 10, $116, airfare back to Hartford. Item 11, $42.16, miscellaneous. Remarks? This one will wind up in court. Mrs. Markham's charges will include attempted homicide, attempt to defraud, attempt to... In the end, it was his attempt to run away, and it didn't work. It never works. Even if you get away, you find something new to run from. Total expenses, $968.20. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's story.
Before I do, I want to say something to you about Thanksgiving. Now, there's a day that deserves celebration. And heartfelt thanks to the God who made us for being able to live in the most free and peaceful and bountiful country in the world. And yet, why wait for next Thursday or any Thanksgiving day? For Americans, it seems to me, Thanksgiving should be every day. Think about it, won't you? Next week in our story, New Orleans, the French Quarter, a beautiful girl, and high adventure. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in tonight's cast were Lois Corbett, Frank Nelson, Virginia Gregg, Bert Holland, Paula Winslow, and John Daner. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Madam Fish curses those stinky drunkards in machines. Welcome back to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Now enjoy this fucking episode of X-1, entitled The Map Makers.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. minus one, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight's story, The Map Makers, by Frederick Pohl.
Damage report, Mr. Bunner.
Aye, sir. Three bulkheads penetrated in AC and D sections, patched in airtight.
How is Lieutenant Groden?
He isn't good. He's unconscious. His head is all bandaged up. There's a million to one chance. I don't think it's happened in 300 years. Meteoric matter hitting a ship in hyperspace.
Mr. Bunner, would you please have the air vents operated to clear the control room of kerosene fumes?
Mr. Lorch.
Aye, sir. Ciccarelli, man the fence.
I'll have a half-G spin, if you please. We can use a little gravity while we figure this out.
Aye, sir. Engine room, half G spin for simulated gravity.
How about the Atlas?
That's the worst damage, sir. The Celestial Atlas is destroyed.
The Atlas was the only record on board of the hyperspace configurations. Is it total loss?
It's dead, sir.
Oh.
Hang on, here comes gravity spin.
What was his name?
The Atlas? Spawn. He had a sister in Seattle, I think.
The password is for burial at the afterlock.
I see.
And, Mr. Bonner, have all officers assemble in the wardroom for an emergency meeting as soon as we are secured for normal space.
At ease, gentlemen.
Gentlemen, we are in trouble. We are in the soup. And we're a long way from home. Havana, would you get me a bulb of coffee, please? Now, nobody is going to come and get us out of this. We'll have to do it ourselves, if we can. Ciccarelli is trying to get us a fix. But I can tell you right now, we are not close to the solar system.
Here you are, sir.
Oh, thank you. That meteor dropped us out of hyperspace in the middle of a jump. Consequently, there isn't a constellation in the sky that you or I or anybody else ever saw before. We might be 100 light years from home, or we might be 10,000.
Well, sir, what about our records?
They went with the Atlas. We can't retrace our steps, not in hyperspace.
Sir?
Yes, what is it, Lorch?
Burial detail standing by at the afterlock.
Very well, we'll get down there in a few minutes. I'm afraid the Atlas will have to wait.
He's a mess, isn't he?
Cover him up. Haven't you got any respect?
Yeah, it's a laugh. Spawn, I mean. Look at his head. They spent 4 years stuffing it with all those equations under that hypno machine. Did you ever see him working a jump?
Oh, my jump station is engine pit 3.
There's enough to curl your hair. You know what it's like doing jump. No lights, no fluorescence even, just those kerosene lamps smoking. And everything looking bent and twisted. You can't tell what you're seeing. Well, Spawn stands right up there next to the captain in a trance. And he's spouting numbers and times and equations. And all the time, his eyes are shut. He's out like a light.
He's sure out for good now.
It's funny. He never knew how to count up his pay when he was conscious. When he's out, he's as good as a 5-story computer.
I never could figure it. It's kind of creepy. Why don't they take a regular machine to do hyperspace navigating?
Well, you ought to know. You just lifted him. Spawn weighed 130, ringing wet. A computer would weigh maybe 3 or 4 tons. Ship couldn't lift it.
We got computers on board.
Yeah, electronic computers. What's the first order before jump?
Douse all electric gear.
Sure. The Terra 1 blew higher than the kite before they found that out. You don't use juice in hyperspace. Not if you want to get out of it. So you can't use a computer during a jump. That's where Spawn came in.
I can't use him in a jump anymore either.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Hey, listen. There's a brass coming to dump him. I gotta get back to my patient. Put out that cigarette and try to look solemn.
Mr. Broderick. How is he, Conboy?
Not so good. I gave him 3 ampules of neomorph in the last 2 hours. That's twice the normal dosage.
Let me see.
Lieutenant Groden's the navigator, isn't he? I mean, what happens with him all cut up in the head?
The captain is a trained navigator.
Well, that doesn't do us any good in jump, does it? Not without the Atlas to do the calculating.
Look, our job down here is to keep Lieutenant Groden out of pain. We'll leave the rest of the bridge, all right?
Sorry, sir. It's just that Corelli in the chart room told me he can't locate one of those stars in his chart. And what's more...
Conboy.
Yes, sir.
Hand me that ampule.
Now hear this.
Now hear this. Recorders mate, second class Eklund, report to the wardroom. Recorders mate, Eklund, report to wardroom.
All right, Eklund, come in.
Recorders mate Eklund reporting, sir.
Stand at ease, Eklund. You've heard about Recorders mate Spahn?
Yes, sir. I was with Charlie when...
Bonner, get Eklund a chair, please.
Yes, sir. There you are.
I'm all right, sir.
You know that Spahn's operation was essential to navigation in a jump.
No, sir. I mean, I don't know much of anything until I'm indexed.
Yes, of course. You were rated a ship's librarian log.
Yes, sir.
Spahn read his calibrations up to this point into you?
I suppose so, sir. I'm in trance when I record.
Yes, of course. Now we're going to need those records. Are you ready?
Yes, sir. The key word is index.
All right, Eklund. Index.
There she goes. Takes about 30 seconds for full trance.
Uh-huh. You know, Bonner, this is risky. Trying to backtrack on hyperspace equations by dead reckoning. A centimeter off of the figures might put us 1,000 kilometers in hyperspace. And anything up to 1,000,000 light years when we dropped back into normal. I wish that meteor had gotten me instead of the Atlas.
She's in trance, sir.
Yeah. All right, Eklund. Ship's log. Journey day 1. Jump 1.
Journey day 1. Jump 1. Normal space coordinates 3456-7465. Sub 456. Time 4356.98.
Ensign Lautz reporting on watch, sir. No maneuvering during watch, no change in operating status. I haven't made an entry for course and position, Mr. Bonner.
Just put down unknown in big letters.
Yes, sir. You didn't get anything out of Eklund?
Oh, sure. We got the absolute magnitudes and the stellar distances of half the stars in the galaxy. And a short course in the geodesics of the n-dimensional space. We didn't get a roadmap. What does that thermometer read?
It's all right, sir. I adjusted heat level.
What?
The welding torches had the temperature up 5 degrees, so I ordered air valved into the expansion line.
Mr. Lorch, you were bleeding air?
Well, yes, sir, to cool ship.
Lorch, you're a fool.
What?
You valve off air as though we had a whole world of it. Did it ever occur to you we might be in space a long time and we might run out of air?
But, sir, that doesn't happen. I mean...
No, not when you can jump. Not when Earth is an hour or a day away, but we can't jump. You just leave those air valves alone. We'll need every molecule.
Groden, can you hear me? It's Doc Broderick. Can you hear me?
Yes, I...
All right, don't talk. You've been hurt. A meteorite got the Atlas and something got you right across the eyes. Drops of molten metal. You're blind, at least for now. We can fix you up from the eye bank when we get back on Earth.
The Atlas.
Atlas. Dad.
Ah, we got enough problems. I've got to take the bandages off now. Can you see anything? We're going to pass the light in front of your eyes. You tell me if you can see anything.
No. No. Nothing, but it hurts. It hurts.
All right, convoy, hand me that ampule.
Secure for jump, Mr. Bonner.
Secure.
Engine room. Damage aft. Damage forward. Generator stations. Radiation control. Cargo hold 1, 2, 3, 4. Men's quarters aft.
You ready, Eklund?
Yes, sir.
Women's Have you ever been on the bridge during a jump?
No, sir.
Well, it's tricky. Your eyes lie to you. You see things that aren't there. I don't know how much you will get in trance.
Nothing, sir. I black out completely.
Oh, good.
Ship secured, sir.
Ship secured, sir.
Kill the spin.
Engine room, kill spin. Ship's company, stand by for free fall. Free fall.
Check off.
Chronometers wound and synchronized. Kerosene lamps lit. Navigator.
Aye.
Communicator.
Aye.
Atlas. I'm sorry. Ready, Eklund?
Aye.
Put her under.
Eklund. Index.
Proceed, Mr. Bonner.
Main circuit breakers open.
Main circuit breakers open.
Electricity cut. Eklund's in trance.
Well, we'll give it a try. Now, Bonner, backtrack on our jumps.
Yeah, maybe it'll work out.
Maybe. Stand by to jump.
Stand by to jump.
Stand by to jump.
We'll go when she's straight up. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, jump.
Not the pressure, Hypo. We can't use current in jump. That's for range.
Groden, it's all right. We're in jump. That's all.
My eyes! My eyes! My eyes!
Phew. Deal. What's the use? You can't use the money even if you win.
What are you trying to do? Chicken out?
Corelli says they got a fix after the jump.
What are we worried about? Deal.
They got a fix, all right. 15,000 light years from Sol.
Shuffle, shuffle.
He says that's the way it is in hyperspace. Distances haven't got anything to do with anything unless you can navigate when you're in jump, and we can't.
Hey, when did Lorch make his rounds?
Why?
I'm going to take off my jumper. It's hot.
Yeah, and it's going to get hotter. Every time the jets blast, every time the cook fries an egg, the ship gets just a little hotter.
Don't mention it.
Every time the jump generators turn over, every time you light a match, that gets us hotter and hotter. Hey, what are you doing?
I'm taking off my skibby shirt. Deal.
Oh. Oh.
How is he, Mr. Broderick?
Oh.
You can tell the captain that Lieutenant Groden remains unimproved. How is he, really? He's working up to some real damage. The kind I can't handle. It's in his head. I had to tell him his sight was gone. Unless we can get back to an eye bank within 10 days. You can patch in an eye, but once the nerve has deteriorated, you can't replace it.
Did he take it hard?
Worse? Worse. He didn't say a word. I know that man is in pain. The convoy found his pills hidden under his pillow. He wouldn't take them. Just lay there, without a sound,
until we went into the jump. Then he screamed his head off.
What's wrong with him?
Who knows? If I had an electroencephaloscope on board, but I'm lucky they let me have a mini x-ray.
Yeah, what did doctors do before they had those gadgets? Shoot the patients?
No. With luck, I could run an old-fashioned verbal psychoanalysis on him. I might pick something significant out of the sludge. Maybe 5 or 6 months. That's what they did before they had the EES. What time is it?
07:56.
I've got sick call in 20 minutes. Heat exhaustion, dizzy spells, skin rashes. I'm running out of aspirin and salt tablets.
Yeah. Bonner had me with a 10-man detail defluffing the filter traps on the air circulators. It's a lucky thing spaceships aren't painted. They'd have us chipping paint.
Now hear this. Mr. Broderick, report to the bridge. Mr. Broderick, report to the bridge.
How am I supposed to do that? I got 2 corpsmen down with heat prostration.
I'll look after Grodin, Mr. Broderick. Maybe I could give him an alcohol rub?
Thanks, Lorch. Oh, by the way, that alcohol.
Yes?
It's denatured.
Here's the problem, Mr. Broderick. We have fuel for just under 40 minutes of rocket blast at standard thrust. That will bring our overall temperature up to 60 degrees centigrade. That's the maximum the human body can stand, right?
Mm-hmm. That's about 140 Fahrenheit. Well, it hits that on Earth in a couple of places around the Dead Sea, but it isn't sustained heat. It drops considerably after dark.
We'll hope we find ourselves out of this before we hit 60 degrees. If we don't, at least we won't starve or suffocate. All right, gentlemen. Mr. Broderick, you can prepare for increasing heat casualties as we proceed.
Yes, sir.
All right, Mr. Bonner. Secure for jump.
My eyes. My eyes.
Now take it easy, Groton. Convoy. Convoy.
Yes, sir.
Where's the doctor?
He stayed on the bridge for the jump.
Well, what do we do for Grodin? During the jump, I can't even see him.
I don't think he can hurt himself. We better just wait till the jump's over.
My eyes. They lied. They lied to me. They lied. I can see it. The master pattern, I can see it. No, not like seeing, like knowing. That's Lorch and Roderick's on the bridge. And the captain. And Earth. And the sun, I can see them. Unbuckle the straps. I've got to get up to the bridge. The jump is almost over. I'll be blind again. Lorch sees me, he'll think it's jump hallucinations. They're lost. But I'm not. I can see the whole universe. I can see.
Jump completed. Secure normal space.
Grodin, come back here. Now, what are you doing out in the passage? Convoy!
Sir?
Come on, give me a hand. Now, how did he get out here and jump? He's blind.
Navigation report negative, sir.
Is there a fix?
No, sir. Corelli thinks he can get a triangulation on an extragalactic nebula. That'd take time.
And what's the temperature?
45.
We don't have time. We'll have to keep on. If we don't end up within a light year of Sol, we're cooked. Literally. So at your convenience, we'll take another jump.
Sir, we've got to take a break. The only way to handle the temperature is frequent rests and liquids.
Will 10 minutes be enough?
Well, I suppose so.
Mr. Bonner, have steward sections issue whatever they have. Juices, water. There's no point in saving it for any length of time. We have about 24 minutes of rocket time before the hull heats up to 60 degrees.
Is there any reasonable chance?
Mr. Broderick, we have tried dead reckoning from the records. But in hyperspace, we can't follow them accurately, not without Atlas. I'm timing the blasts from my pulse, because you can't trust reading a clock unless you can touch it. When we jump, I might as well be blind.
Easy. Get him back on the bed. Now, easy, Conroy, easy.
Oh, I got his arm.
I can't figure how he got out there. I saw him, but I thought it was a jump hallucination.
Easy, Mr. Gordon. Now, just lie back. No. I can see.
Is that possible?
Look at him, Mr. Lorch. His eyes are covered with bandages. He's blind.
Ten minutes is up, Captain.
All right. Secure for jump.
I have to assign three more men to each generator. The crew couldn't handle the manual clutch in the heat.
Very well. Proceed.
Chronometers wound and synchronized. Kerosene lamps lit. Navigator.
Aye.
Ready, Eklund?
Aye.
Index.
Proceed, Mr. Bonner.
Main circuit breakers open.
Stand by to jump.
Stand by to jump.
Straight up. 4, 3, 2, 1, jump.
Thirty seconds to full velocity, sir.
You never can get used to it. You can hear, you can touch, but your eyes lie. The photons and electrons that carry vision have some crazy mathematics of their own.
I know, sir.
I remember once I saw a row of monkeys sitting on the control console. I wondered what they were before hyperspace twisted them into monkeys.
10 seconds.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Now it seems as if I'm seeing Groton up here on the bridge, and I know very well he's down in sick bay, asleep.
Captain.
Who's that? Lorch?
Yes, sir.
You're not on bridge watch.
Captain, he's really here. It's not a hallucination.
What are you talking about?
Groton. He's really here, sir.
Lorch, what's the idea of bringing him up here during jump?
I only brought him to the forward lock, sir. Then he brought me.
Broderick, is this some kind of heat exhaustion?
I'm telling you, sir. We went into jump, and I couldn't see anything that made sense. Just twisting shadows and lights, you know. But Groden took my hand and led me right up here along the passage.
He's blind.
Not in hyperspace. Not in jump. Then he can see.
Captain.
I gotta get him to sick bay. He must be in intense pain.
Yes, it's painful, all right. But I can see the whole plan, the whole pattern. It makes sense to me now. I can see the stars and the ship and the Earth at the same time. The equations on hyperspace. I can see them the way you can see a triangle or a circle. I can see the Earth, and I can tell you how far it is.
Groden. You mean you can pilot us home?
Yes, I can.
All right, Mr. Groden. Take over this ship.
Number 3 pattern. Fire. Cut. Velocity. 5, 6, 3, 7, 4, 8. Relative thrust. 7, 8, 6, 7. Counterblast for 2 seconds. Pattern 6, 5, 7. Blast. Cut. All right. Hit normal space at mark. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Mark.
Look out, he's gonna fall.
Yeah, I've got him.
He saw. He saw in hyperspace. He navigated by line of sight in hyperspace.
We'll have to order a stretcher up. He's blind again.
Sun system. 239 degrees, 45 elevation. Magnified by 50 on forward screen.
That's not Sol.
No, but it's a place to land. There's a planet there. It's Earth normal.
You can land and cool ship and replenish air.
Mr. Bonner, take her down to atmosphere. Have planetology section start to check it out.
Aye, sir. Ensign Lorch, report down to planetology. Engine room, landing routine.
Why didn't we hit Earth on the Chump Groden? Why?
Just as well, Mr. Broderick. If the planet checks out, it's a whole world for colonization.
Sure, sure, but it'll be 2 weeks before you can replenish ship and catalyze fuel. There won't be any new eyes for Lieutenant Groden then. The optic nerves will be gone too far. You'll never have eyes again.
I knew that before I brought you up here.
Ready, blast. Or skip deceleration in pit 3.
You mean, Groden, you could have brought us back to Earth?
In 2 jumps.
Then why didn't you? I can't allow a man to go blind because of phony heroics.
Do you want to know how many Sol-type systems there are within 5,000 light years? I can tell you. Want to know what the universe looks like in hyperspace? I can tell you that, too. Only I can't describe it. The whole thing is as orderly and chartable as our own space. And I could see it, all of it. And you offer me eyes. Captain, we have a quadrant of hyperspace to chart. I can see during the jumps. Captain, I...
Look out. He's still in pain.
I can see to the end of the galaxy. And beyond.
I know. But in the meantime, Mr. Broderick.
Aye, sir.
When we take off again, Lieutenant Groden will be in command during jump. He will handle this ship, and at his direction, we will chart hyperspace. But in the meantime, will you kindly lead him to his quarters?
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Dead Ringer by Lester Del Rey. A fascinating story about a man who learned that there was nothing on Earth which could set him free, least of all the truth. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Mapmakers, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were John Larkin, Ed Prentice, Bob Hastings, Tom Collins, Dick Hamilton, Burford Hamden, Raleigh Bester, and Carl Frank. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Listening to Ricky Jin's Old Time Radio. Join us again next week at the same time on the mighty KONR. Don't forget to play What Will Mrs. Thompson Say at LGAP.com. Now, stay tuned for the Sasquatch Report.